to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse. It's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, a special edition featuring Inside Lacrosse, ESPN, and Big Ten Network analyst, and my old friend, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it.
That almost blew my ear.
Back in the saddle again,
Dixon. Yeah, it's been a minute, right?
Yeah.
How are you? How you doing?
We've talked a lot this summer, but not to our listeners.
We've talked a lot. I was in attendance at several of the Inside Lacrosse events that you guys ran. Congratulations. Good summer for IL.
Thank you. We had a great summer, and one of the big additions was putting the games on ESPN 3, our championship games from both our summer 2 tournaments and then our committed academies, girls and boys. And you were available for 3 of those broadcasts, and you did a great job.
So thank you. It was a pleasure to be a part of it. Got to work with, Dan Aburn. Got to work with Ty Zanders, got to work with Terry Foy, mostly Terry. It was great. It was a lot of fun. But, first time we've sat in the IL Podcast Studio, the palatial IL Podcast Studio. And we thought of this idea, about 2-3 weeks ago? A special edition. We did a couple special editions a few years ago, if you remember. Jerry Smith from PJ's Pub, as PJ's Pub was closing its doors. And then we had the opportunity to sit down with Dick Adell. A couple of falls ago, which our listeners really, really enjoyed. They enjoyed both. And then we're like, hey, there's been a lot of coaching movement in the college ranks.
As there usually is.
As there usually is.
Yeah. More and more with more and more programs.
Right. So why not interview some not brand new, but head coaches at taking over for different programs.
And learn about them and the programs that they're inheriting or taking over and starting the conversation for the 2020 men's lacrosse season.
Right. So we're going to be bringing you a series of interviews with new head coaches, and we're really excited to do that and give a little bit of insight, obviously, into the professional aspect of where they've been, what they're taking over, but also a couple little personal tidbits that I think our listeners will find really interesting and entertaining.
And our first interview up in the list was someone who took over the Harvard program on July 1st, a longtime Notre Dame assistant who had a lot of offers between some head coaching jobs over the past few years and has always been a candidate or a speculative candidate in a lot of coaching searches over the last few years, and finally made the leap from South Bend to Cambridge. And that guest is Jerry Byrne. And here is our conversation with the new Harvard head coach, Jerry Byrne.
We are joined by Harvard head coach Jerry Byrne. Jerry, of course, a longtime assistant at Notre Dame, now taking over for the Crimson program in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Jerry, thanks for spending some time with us on a D-Fly Dixie podcast.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here following the pantheon of personalities and lacrosse people that have been on the podcast before me.
Well, we're going to get to that, and some of the pantheon of personalities include some of your former players at Notre Dame. Brendan Gleeson and Brian Costabile were guests this past spring. Yeah,
both those guys, great guests, especially Costabile. I thought that kid is fantastic.
They're both. I just was with Brendan Gleeson's dad up in Lake Placid, and, both of those guys are, rock stars, captains, kind of the models that you look for in any athlete on any team that you hope to coach. So, one of the benefits of being at Notre Dame so long is you start kind of forming your standards and values and the type of people and the type of students that you're going to look for in recruiting and by extension, their parents and families and things like that. So those are two winners, those guys for sure.
July 1st of 2019, you're named the head coach at Harvard University. And Jerry, you are a guy whose name came up a lot over the last decade for various head coaching positions, yet you remained in South Bend. What about Harvard right here, right now, made this the time and place to go to?
I think there's a lot of ways to answer that question. My fidelity to Notre Dame was based on a lot of different factors. One was, my love and belief in that place, the fact that I had gone there for graduate school. My wife had gone to Notre Dame undergrad. Two of my children had attended school there, and just being in, kind of ingrained and in line with the values of that place. So, the decision to not take some of the past opportunities was based on, the belief in Notre Dame and belief in my family and belief in family and, where my kids were going to school, whether it was at Culver or Notre Dame, and being part of their lives consistently. My relationship with my wife, who's a very successful physician and unbelievably well thought of in her world in South Bend and in the wider kind of Indiana and Midwest medical community. You don't make decisions in a vacuum. You have to take in all those factors about not doing something or choosing to stay somewhere. But, the why Harvard at that time was, the opportunity to be at, the preeminent academic, research, medical, legal, humanities, social university in the world. And so, that always gives you an opportunity to be in the conversations with parents and young people who want the best in their own development as people and thinkers. So the opportunity to be at Harvard always started with that and Harvard's place in our world, kind of nationally and globally. From a lacrosse standpoint, the fact that they've had, good players and good seasons in the past, but haven't found a way to be consistently in the top 10, that's an intellectual and athletic challenge unto itself. And so that was really attractive to me, so you had both the intellectual, brand of Harvard, its place in our world, the fact that, that's real hope for them to achieve and be really competitive in athletics, not just lacrosse. And that's been proven out with the success of a bunch of their teams at Harvard. The support of my wife, the fact that my kids were, graduates of, had already graduated from Notre Dame, and, a sense of adventure and the sense of the challenge to make something that's never been before, which is Harvard as a consistent NCAA and top 10 program. So the kind of convergence of all those things was what made it a great time to look at it deeply. And then obviously the support of my wife, Dr. Tracy Byrne, and my kids, and then to be at a city like Boston, in a town like Cambridge, at a place like Harvard at this moment, I couldn't be more energized. I think you hear it in my voice. I think you hear it how I'm trying to articulate what the opportunity is there. And there's nowhere to go but up. And I think the response in recruiting and from high school and travel coaches and, being on a podcast with guys like you, I think it's all pointing in the right direction.
Coach Byrne, you talk about a lot of the incredible positive attributes of Harvard and Boston, but it is a program that only won one game in the Ivy League last year and is looking to move in a new direction. What are some of the challenges that you think you'll face immediately as the new coach and some things that you want to work to build and change in the program?
First of all, I don't think there's a ceiling for Harvard's lacrosse. Harvard has proven throughout its history, and its history is longer than any other university's history in our country, is that they have a commitment to excellence, and that has included athletics. So it's not foreign to them to have achievement both as individual athletes or in team success in athletics. So it's one of those things that I think it's really hard for people to understand that, here's a small tidbit. There's more Division I athletes at Harvard than any other university in our country. Wow. And so you can't make that statement. There's 42 sports at Harvard. And so you can't make that statement if you don't believe in the balance between academics and athletics. So I think one of the challenges, and probably the paramount challenge, is changing people's perspective of where athletics fit at Harvard. Nothing is bigger than Harvard. Nothing is bigger than the intellectual experience that you'll have at Harvard, the residential experience to being in a, you know, kind of a cauldron of thinking and creation and research that Harvard represents. But their relationship with athletics is deep and long, and it's current and it's modern and all those things. So I think the biggest challenge, to be honest with you, is perception, of people's perception of what Harvard is, its role and position in athletics, you know, where lacrosse can go. So it's not about admissions, although we need obviously great students and people who want to be at a place like Harvard. But the challenge is a negative perception that people have that you can't be successful as a student and an athlete at Harvard, and that's just not accurate. And so when I look at the last 5 weeks of what my experience has been, you know, in securing our staff and getting our message out there to high school and travel coaches and prospects, it has been almost singularly around. There's 15 other sports that are competitive nationally at Harvard and more that are within range of that. And so it kind of blows people's minds when they start hearing about the legacy of, you know, Olympic athletes and professional athletes and people who are continuing to play at the highest level in a variety of sports, is that those aren't one-offs. That's part of the DNA of Harvard. And so to answer your question, I could go in probably four or five other different directions, but more than anything is communicating to the influencers, the high school coaches, the travel coaches, the prospects, that Harvard is in athletics. Harvard believes in excellence in athletics. We have the facilities, we have the resources, we have the talent. Now we have the coaches, that the sky is the limit.
We are joined by Harvard head coach Jerry Byrne here on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, a special edition D-Fly and Dixie podcast. Coach, you just mentioned some of the challenges, and you said you can go in a myriad of directions, but what has been the reception of the Harvard community, both around campus, the community, departments, players, parents, alumni, all those different groups?
You know, when you're a coach at any level, you know, whether you're an assistant or a head coach, one of the things you realize is that there's a tremendous number of stakeholders that, you know, have opinions and influence and can affect, you know, the direction and the success of your program. And a lot of those, you know, you never really hear about, you know, whether it's the people who run the resident hall and house system at Harvard, the people who run the community service at Harvard, the facilities people. You know, everyone always kind of focused on, all right, what is, you know, your trainer and your training facilities and nutrition and tutoring, all those things obviously are critical, but the response in the totality of the people who are actually at Harvard has been overwhelming. You know, when this all came together in the middle of June and end of June, you know, as you guys all know, you know, the coaches, assistant coaches are on the road. They're going from event to event. They're going to the Under Armour tryouts. They're going to Maverick. They're going to all these different events and just driving and flying all over the country. So it's not the most ideal time to be considering a career change and a move and all of those things. And so, you know, that being said, the whole gamut of people who support and endorse Harvard Athletics in Cambridge has been unbelievably positive, from admissions to training to facilities to equipment to academic support. All of these pieces, they're just energized, and I'm pumped because I'm traveling around, been gone pretty much the whole month of July, you know, doing home visits and evaluating prospects, that if you don't have that support back in Cambridge, then it turns a pretty kind of stressful situation into, you know, a complete nightmare. So their ability to support our efforts in the athletic department and beyond has been, you know, miraculous. And so, you know, but specifically within that question, the Harvard Alumni Network, the Friends of Harvard Lacrosse, the Harvard, you know, Varsity Club, which is the Letter Winners Society, all these, this group couldn't be any more, you know, they're reaching out to the point where it's kind of overwhelming, that I consider myself someone who's very you know, responsible and gets back to people on text and phone calls. But the volume has been just so overwhelming that I've been derelicting my duties in that area. But, you know, their hope, their aspirations, which comes through and well wishes, as well as, you know, support for our guys in internships and in job placement, support for some of the travel and experiences that we're going to do at Harvard. It's like, I don't even know how to answer it. And so basically I tell them, thank you. And I'm not sure what you can do right now, but I'll kind of get back to you when we need something. And so it's, you know, the outpouring support, because I think like there's probably a handful of schools where people believe that Harvard should be playing at the highest level. Excuse me, that school should be playing at the highest level. And Harvard is clearly one of them. So there's this pent up hope. And we're going to satiate that. We're going to work really, really hard. Our staff is already, you know, doing great things relative to our camps and our tournaments and our outgoing messages out to the high school and travel coaches. So I think we've planted our flag that we're coming. And we're willing to do the work to make it happen.
Coach Byrne, you mentioned your staff a few times, and one of the most important things a new coach can do is assemble a good team around him. What were you looking for in your assistants as you filled those positions pretty quickly?
You know, guys who, you know, I think a couple of different attributes, and I think that's a really good question on your part. I think the you know, guys who love to teach the game. Because in the Ivy League, we have, you know, different rules regarding, you know, practice time and access and things like that. So you got to have really, really good teachers of the game. I really wanted a lot of youth, because one thing is obvious is that I'm not young. And so I wanted young, hungry, super competitive, willing to learn, not blank slates. You know, I want guys who are bringing their opinions around everything, whether it was recruiting or communication, player development, coaching philosophy. I wanted them to bring all that stuff. I knew that when you have younger guys who might not have had the same experiences I've had, that their opinions might be maybe limited or a little bit more narrow, but I really wanted them to have the confidence and the belief that they could say anything and that you should challenge everything. And that because, you know, we're starting at something, we're starting at a place that we're trying to resurrect. And so I needed guys who had the confidence in their own voice, a belief in their own coaching philosophy, an openness to new ways of looking at challenging things, not just on the field in practice or in game, but also how we're doing our recruiting, how we're managing all the pieces that go into recruiting and our messaging going out into the world. So I needed that kind of youthful exuberance, that youthful curiosity, that real competitive hunger, but also being open to, hey, there's some things that I need to teach you that I feel really strongly about, that these are non-negotiable things. I needed them to be willing to embrace that, but also be confident to challenge it. And so I feel like the guys that we put in place, Neil Hutchinson, who came with me from Notre Dame, Will Corrigan, who played for me for 4 years at Notre Dame, who I've known since birth, Ted Bergman, who came from Wesleyan and Cleveland State, who was a great goalie there, Al Littell, who's been a coach and an operations director. We have one more person who's going to be supporting our team that I can't divulge right now, but it's very exciting. But all of these guys bring all those character traits, and they're just they get the intellectual challenge, they get the coaching challenge, they get the recruiting challenge really well. And so even though we haven't spent a lot of time together because of, you know, the HR process and all the things that go into it, even though we haven't been together that a lot, we've made great progress. And so those were the attributes, and all of those guys are delivering on that already.
Coach, I was hoping you could finish this sentence for me. With Jerry Byrne as head coach at Harvard, the Harvard lacrosse player will be blank.
You know, will be a man of Harvard. He'll represent the values of Harvard, but he will also have an unparalleled competitive heat and fire. And that, because you can't excel on one side of the Charles River academically if you don't bring that competitiveness and that curiosity. And when they walk across that bridge to come to the athletic side of campus, we don't want them to leave that there. We want them to bring it and enhance it. So, you know, what with Jerry Byrne as the head coach at Harvard, the Harvard lacrosse player will be a ferocious competitor, a man of Harvard to represent the values of Harvard. He'll be kind. He'll be ethical. He'll be ferociously competitive. He'll be committed to his teammates. He'll be committed to represent Harvard and Harvard's values. He will proudly represent his town and his parents who gave them the guidance to get to a place like Harvard. And they'll have an appreciation and a humility to be at Harvard to represent our school and our program in a way that in the fourth quarter gives us a chance to be successful. And it also gives them a chance to be successful with the rest of their life.
Who were some of the biggest influences on your career as a coach?
You know, I think there's a lot of people that go into that. I started playing lacrosse really late, even though I was from a town that was pretty ingrained in the sport at the time on Long Island. My oldest brother is a retired New York City fireman. He never played, but he's a really good athlete. And when you grow up with two older brothers, you get in Levittown in a small backyard, you get beat up a lot, and you're the goalie a lot, or you're the guy who has to dodge against your brothers a lot. So my older brother Thomas was a huge influence on me. And my middle brother Steve was a great player at Virginia, one of the great players probably of the last 50 years of lacrosse. You know, he started playing before me and kind of modeled, the kind of person and kind of player I wanted to be, just by trying to copy him. And then, Jack Moran, who was my high school coach at Chaminade, who's from Levittown as well. He gave me the opportunity to play. And you probably tell you this day, the only reason he kept me on the team at Chaminade is because my brother had become a great player at Virginia. So he thought he was sure I wasn't adopted. So he knew there was some DNA.
A little connected. Osmosis.
Yes. He knew we were related, and he's hoping that there was some DNA connected there. Obviously, Dick Garber, my college coach, who was a legend and just a warm and charismatic man, not a classic X's and O's coach, but a guy who you walked out on the field and you felt like you had a great chance to be successful. Eric Kemp was my defensive coach at UMass. Guy Van Arsdale coached me as well. Peter Schmitz coached me at UMass as well. And then, obviously I kept on playing a lot after I graduated college. I never felt like I kind of actualized my ability as a player in college. And so I just kind of kept on playing. So all these, playing in all these different tournaments and all these different leagues before the MLL and the PLL started, that is really formative. And then obviously all the guys I coached with at Notre Dame, Kevin Corrigan and Brian Fisher and Matt Carwick and Neil Hutchinson, obviously. And, just you take and give from all those people. Yeah, I think you have to come into it not having spent most of my adult life in coaching. Is, I spent most of my life, my professional life, in the corporate world. And so when you come to coaching, it's hard not to bring all the different people who you worked with corporately. It's hard not to bring those experiences to the field and use some of those lessons in the coaching world. The X's and O's aren't necessarily that complex, but I think the guys who I think had the biggest effect on me were the guys who, went out of their way to connect with me when I was a player. And I think of all the things that I think I can bring to Harvard is an empathy and a sense of what it's like to be an athlete. I still like to play. I'm still active myself. And I think that helps me have an appreciation when you're demanding things of your players, that by still being active, you know what it's like to try to do something physically when you're tired, or that you're intellectually tired, or the guy's better than you physically. And so I think I bring that appreciation to a huddle. I bring it to a drill. I bring it to a game. I know that's hard, the things that I'm asking them to do, because not that I'm doing it at the same level as they are, but I can get how hard it is. And so the guys who helped me do that have been the biggest impact on me.
Jerry, how's the lunchtime basketball scene at Harvard?
You know, I haven't been in Cambridge as often as I would like over the last 5 weeks. There is a noontime hoop game. We have the staff has not participated yet, but we found our way into the squash octagon pretty consistently. It's actually part of the interviewing process if you want to coach with me. It was part of the process at Notre Dame, and it was definitely part of the process at Harvard. So, hey, do you play squash? No. Yeah, well, now you do. That's pretty much part of the thing. So we play a lot of squash at Harvard. Harvard has a 14 court center. They're the national champion, the reigning national champions in men's and women's squash. So the squash coach has been very kind to us to give us our own court. It's usually court 14 to stay away from all the people who actually know how to play squash. So not a lot of basketball yet at Harvard. Played a lot this summer. You know, the RBA is a very strong part of the coaching community. So we like to get on the recruiting trail. Like to get on the court. But squash is right now kind of the unofficial sport of Harvard men's lacrosse staff.
You love competition, and getting back to kind of the Harvard lacrosse aspect, you're moving out of a conference, the ACC, which you've been a part of with Notre Dame for a long, long time, entering into a highly competitive Ivy League. How do you compare the two?
You know, to be honest with you, I have not watched 1 second of Harvard lacrosse on film, which means I haven't watched a lot of Ivy League lacrosse on film. And
sure.
My mindset around that is there's plenty of time to watch film before our season starts and before our practice starts. I want to have a total kind of growth mindset around our team and our players and our incoming freshmen. And I want to have be open to who guys can be. You know, and so if I that too much, I think I can cement and fossilize some thinking around players, which may end up being correct, but doesn't give you open to maybe either other skills that they may have or guys who may not have played as much. And so I don't have a sense of kind of Harvard and Harvard's place in the league. Obviously, as Dennis Green says, your record says what you are, is that So I know what their record was and who they beat and who they didn't defeat last year. So I'm clear on that. And I have a sense of, you know, the points that are returning and things like that. But I don't have any, and I really don't have any desire to do that, because I'd rather have that be exposed to me as we practice and start lifting and do things. So that's my feeling relative to Harvard. Relative to the league, obviously the league has had a tremendous amount of success. You know, Penn had a great season last year. Cornell has been consistently good. You know, Yale has won a national championship and played in the championship game. You know, Dartmouth is coming. And so, you know, I you know, to be honest with you, I usually don't get into those league, this league versus that league. And, you know, it's one of those kind of conversations that's nearly unwinnable. Which league is better than this league and who this guy is better than that guy. All I really care about is developing and evolving Harvard lacrosse based with the players that I have. If I watch too much film from last year, and I'm not planning to watch any, but if I do, the one quarter of that team is gone. So I'm not really looking at that team. I'm looking at a 75% version of that team, because those guys who are on that, the seniors on that team, are now gone. So can I watch a future opponent? Yeah, but they're in the same thing. And there's plenty of time to do scouts and prepare and develop opinions around the guys in the league. I'm singularly focused on the culture of our team and the ethos of our team as we come back, as they start arriving on campus at the end of August.
You're one of the bigger personalities in the sport of lacrosse, Jerry, and you and I have gotten to know each other fairly well. I know you're a big proponent of hip-hop music, 80s movies, but I also know you love a good meal. And I know one of your favorites is one of my hometown's hot spots, the Tawny Town Deli. I know you haven't spent a ton of time in Cambridge so far, but any to go to spots that our listeners should definitely check out when they're up north.
If either of you guys have ever been to Cambridge before, you realize that it's, and Harvard predates Cambridge, and, Cambridge predates kind of Boston in some ways. So it's a weird, from a historical standpoint, you have a university that was founded in 1636. And so it is, the Harvard Square and Cambridge are kind of interwoven in a weird way, in a really cool way, because the school and then all the different merchants kind of built around it. There's a tremendous food scene right in Harvard Square, like a 6-minute walk. Our offices sits right on the Charles River, and you walk across this beautiful bridge and you walk right into Harvard Square. And Harvard Square is this kind of just bustling, it's tech startups, it's great restaurants, it's, students and just unbelievable energy and a ridiculous number of places to eat of every kind of genre and ethnicity, as you can imagine. So one of the places that's become kind of a hotspot for us with recruits and for the staff is a place called Felipe's, which is a burrito place. There's a really good bagel place, black cheese bagel, right over the bridge. And so, I'm supposed to be eating much healthier. So if my wife is listening to this, I apologize. Maybe you can edit that out. But there's a tremendous great Mexican and sandwich places. And one of the ways you learn about that is not just is through experimentation, but also talking to your players. We had about 8 to 10 players who were doing summer school and doing internships in Boston. And so, you ask them. You ask them what they're eating, and then you kind of follow that lead.
Well, Coach Byrne, I really appreciate your time with us today and your candidness, always. Best of luck to you and the Crimson as you guys get going this fall with your new program and to your staff. We look forward to talking to you often.
Yeah, I'm always welcome. Mark and I, we love to banter. We're always sharing screenshots of, 80s hip hop songs that we're listening to. And, I try to have fun with what we're doing. I take what I do seriously. I don't take myself that seriously. I couldn't be more fired up to be coaching at Harvard. And the response from the players and the question you guys asked earlier has been, I don't even know. I can't even think of an adjective to describe it. And so, if I can help you guys in any way, I'd love to do these things whenever you need me.
Give me your top 3 hip hop acts from the mid-80s.
Mid-80s? I think
mid to late 80s.
mid to late 80s. I think I was a big Gangstar fan. I think I liked their style. They had a, it was a couple of guys. They didn't curse a lot. They had a message. They had good beats, but it was really kind of about, the message of kind of telling the story of life in the inner city, but also there was an element of hope in that. I saw Run DMC, back in the day.
Nice.
So you gotta go Reverend Run.
Of course.
And DMC. M for never dirty, C for mostly clean, as they used to say. And then, I listened to the Beasties, like Paul's Boutique is one of the great rap albums of all time. Everybody's always, Licensed to Ill was the first Beasties album. But Paul's Boutique was really good. And then, and when they got with Rick Rubin, he was definitely pointing them in the right direction. That was a tough question to answer. I would have liked not got that question in advance, but
put you on the spot. I'd throw Public Enemy in there.
Movies and Music podcast. That's what you should start calling coaches on, because coaches have more personality than the show. And so that might be a side project for you guys.
It could be another special edition, perhaps.
Let's go.
Jerry, thanks so much again. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to keeping in touch throughout the rest of 2019 and 2020. Best of luck to you and your staff.
Well, you guys keep it real. I'll be waiting.
If you like what you heard, please do us a favor. Click on the subscribe button. Just smash that bad boy. Leave us a rating. It really does help. And share it with a friend. You can hit us up on Twitter. He is at Dixon Lacrosse, and I am at D_FLY, at D_fly. Or you can email me with a question or concern at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. That's DFLYNN at insidelacrosse.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.